Hey friends, it's Kara Kay, and this is the Asking for a Friend podcast, a show for the woman who has questions about herself, the church, and the world. We are all asking tough questions that affect us as women in the culture that surrounds us, and we are looking for a safe space to ask them. But don't worry, I know you're only asking for a friend. Hey friends, welcome to the show this week. I have a really fun episode for you today, and this is kicking off actually a three-part series where I am helping answer the question, what are the secrets of a secure woman? So I have invited three women onto the show over the next few weeks to talk about this topic of what it looks like to be secure as a woman through business, through motherhood, through body image, through race, all of these topics that come up for us as women, and what that looks like to just be confident and secure in who we are. So up this week is my dear friend, Allie Worthington. Now, Allie and I go like way, way back. I feel like I've known her forever, and I'm just so grateful that over the last year, I've gotten to know her even more. We have been working together. I am the content manager. Yeah, I think that's my title, over at her writing and speaking community called Creatives. You guys should definitely go check that out. And it's just been a joy to work with her and learn and grow from her. She's somebody I've always looked up to as a mentor, big sister figure in my life. So I'm just super grateful. And I'm really excited for you guys to listen to our chat today. So here we go. Let's get started with what are the secrets of a secure woman? I want you to tell your banana story. Would you be willing to share this with us? Because it's just too
good. Well, here's the deal. We live in a strange world. The world right now is different than the world has ever been. Some of us have never spent a lot of time ordering our groceries online since this new world, right?
Right.
So online grocery shopping is very difficult. When you select your food, sometimes food's out of stock and they let you choose an alternative. So for me, I have five sons. I need a large banana influx every week. So I chose 10 bananas. Walmart.com groceries told me that bananas were out to make another selection. The other choice was organic bananas. So I was like, cool, 10 organic bananas. Done. Send. Done. The next day, lovely Walmart delivery grocery person puts it all on my porch. We bring it all inside. I have 10 massive bunches of bananas. And here's what's weird. My husband's home. He's in the other room. My kids are, he's in the bedroom. My kids are helping me take it in the kitchen. And I have to get on a coaching call with a client. And I say to the boys, I put four bunches of bananas in the kitchen. I start grabbing six bunches of bananas. I go, don't tell your father about these extra bananas. And I hide them in my office. And I don't know what it is about me. I'm so prideful. I don't want to hear Mark laugh. That's my husband. I hide them in my office, and then I told the internet about it the next day on the morning show with Joe, my husband comes in my office the next 2 days later and goes, looks down at the floor and goes, what's with all the bananas?
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
And I was like, listen, online ordering is hard, because if anybody buys their groceries from Walmart.com, if you get non-organic bananas, it's 10 cents each or something. You buy them individually. But if you get organic bananas, they only sell them by the bunch. So if you're going to put in 10, you are getting 10 bunches. And nobody at any point in the process looks at an order and goes, does this woman really want 10 bunches of organic bananas?
They just think that's normal. Because people order crazy stuff.
Well, I will tell you, back in March, like the week before everything shut down, because, you know, I'm a nerd. I'm watching the news.
Yeah, right.
I'm following the epidemiologist. You better believe I had some crazy orders. At one point, I ordered 10 cans of black beans.
Because we're going to be able to eat is rice and beans.
Literally, I ordered like 15 boxes of noodles. I'm that person. I caused all the problems. I did not clear out the toilet paper at Walmart, I promise. But I did make some weird orders as we were getting ready to shut down. So, you know, I have five boys. It would be like Lord of the Flies if I didn't have enough food in the house.
That's right. I can't imagine. With one boy, and he's only four, I think he's about to eat everything in my home. I'm scared for when he's a teenager. It will be interesting.
It's insane. One of our middle boy, who's 16, he regularly eats second lunch and second dinner. Mm-hmm. And so whatever leftovers are in the fridge, sometimes we'll have to say, hey, Joey, we would really like some of this for tomorrow. So pace yourself.
Save some for the rest of us. Oh, it's amazing. Okay, I love it because I've done it so many times. I am the world's worst at like thinking about sizes and what that means. And so I feel like it's almost every time we get an order and my husband just looks at me and he's like, all right, what did you mess up this time? Like there's always something that I misjudged, that it's either massive or it's really, really small. So
you haven't lived until you've accidentally ordered a 5-pound can of baked beans.
That's so true. So true. All right. So this week we're actually kicking off a series this week where I'm going to be talking to different women and talking about and answering this question of what are the secrets of a secure woman? So maybe as you went through your banana gate, you probably didn't feel like a very secure woman in your grocery shopping, but I want to shift and talk about how we can be secure in who we are, who God says that we are, who we are in different stages of life and in our businesses. So first question for you, you have a book coming out called Standing Strong that everyone needs to go and pre-order right now because
thank you.
For one, the world is falling apart and we have to support authors or we're all going to be out of a job. And two, your books are just amazing. And so I know it will influence so many people. So do you think is the thing that holds women back from being who God has called them to be, who God's created them to be?
Well, I think to some degree, for every woman, it's a unique mixture. But if we want to look at it as an overall look, I think there's a mixture of nature and nurture. So the nurture part for women would be the culture. The culture, as girls are growing up and as women reach adulthood, you know, we're taught to be very nice. Don't be ambitious. Mm-hmm. This is what nice women do. Don't say too much, but you better say the right amount. Don't do this. Make sure you do that. Women are told at every step, here's how you should behave. Here's what's perfect. Make sure everything is perfect. Make sure you don't do anything wrong. And when we are raised to be in such a bubble, we don't feel free to, express our gifts. We don't feel free to kind of take a leap of faith and have it potentially not turn out well at the beginning. Yeah. That's really scary for women. So we have that part, but then naturally we all have a bit of self-doubt inside of us.
Right.
We all have been taught to some degree that humility means we're just not going to try anything. We are not going to think well of ourselves. We have a really weird sense of humility as women. When we want to be, I think, properly humble, I think we want to have a mixture of confidence from our life experiences and what God puts in us, but with real humility. Humility and confidence are not two ends of the spectrum. Humility and confidence for Christian women go hand in hand. And the thing is, women are not truly taught growing up what it means to be a woman and where our value is. So it's very common to hear women kind of call themselves and other women in their community daughters of God, but we never really get a great explanation of what does that mean for us? What does it precisely mean? I mean, and at the core, it means we're valuable. It means that nothing that we say or do can make more or less of us, that we're valuable for who we are. It means other people don't define us. That builds confidence. We know that we're chosen because God chose us. We know that we're forgiven because Jesus forgives us. We know that we're strong, not because of what we do, but we're strong because God has made us with an ability to survive anything that comes our way. And you know, you can go back to the Garden of Eden with Eve. Eve was created as a helper corresponding to the man. In Hebrew, that word is azer kenegdo. Azer means helper and kenegdo means opposition or against. Not opposition like disharmony, but balance and support. And I think that many women, myself included, grew up in a culture where we were taught that it means we're going to be a helpmeet. And right, we are born just to support a man. But when you think of the word counterpart, you want to think of two things that are complementing and balancing and opposing each other. And you can imagine a beam or a plank. If you stand it up alone, it is going to fall over. But if you add another plank and lean it against that one, they support each other. The right. second plank is opposing the weight of the first. And that's it's true for two wheels on a bicycle, two wings on a plane. And azer is used 21 times in the Bible, and it describes women with the same word as it, the Bible will often describe God as Israel's helper. It's used 16 times for God as a military defense and protective term. When David says, "My help comes from the Lord," he is using that same word. Right. And I think that once we as women step out of the unfortunately, the cultural weight that we've been raised in to some degree and go, okay, what does the Bible say? And when I break into the meanings of this word, what does God want me to learn about that? It completely changes the truth about who we are as women, who we are as women of God, and what God has for us to be and to do in this world.
I love what you said about life experiences and how that really impacts us. And I think that that is so true. The life experiences we have really help build us and create us. I think when we're in the midst of them, if it's a hard, you know, a really tough life experience, we don't want to be in the middle of it. We just want to be out. We want to be done and we want to rush through it. But it's, I found with my life, it's those experiences that really help me find my rest and my security in God. How has that been true in your life?
Oh, well, unfortunately, pain is where all the good stuff is.
That's right.
I mean, I always say, because I'm a coach and I write books for women, that I don't want to learn from somebody that hasn't been through hell themselves.
Absolutely.
Because that's where wisdom comes from. It's where insight comes from. For me, my story is really interesting. I graduated college and then focused on marriage and being a stay-at-home mom. And all I wanted to do my whole life really was be a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. And I was in my sweet spot. But after our fourth son was born, right before the big recession happened, my husband lost his job. And it took a while to find another job. And a while we were expecting, it took a long time.
Yeah.
Our fifth son was born. This was 12 years ago. And when he was 4 weeks old, we knew we had to just face reality. We had run out of our money, and our home was up for a short sale. So we all moved out. We moved in with my grandfather a few hours away. The short sale somehow fell through. The home ended up going into foreclosure. We ended up filing bankruptcy. We lost everything we owned except for what fit into two small pods, storage units. And it's funny, when you are looking at, oh, I need to choose what I'm going to keep and what I'm going to let go of, it was the expensive stuff we collected through the years isn't what we kept. We kept the boxes of the kids' toys because we knew eventually those toys were going to come out of the pods units when we settled right. somewhere, and we wanted life to feel okay and secure for them. I fought with my husband to keep the rocking chair that I had rocked all five babies in. Oh. That rocking chair is still in my living room just because it's so special, because right. it's something that I actually kept from those years. So we lived that summer with my grandfather. He lived out in the woods, no cell coverage, no nothing. And we would drive our kids to the McDonald's playland for them to play every day, and my husband to apply for new jobs. And I would Google on my old broken laptop with missing keys, how do you make money on the internet? How do you start a business on the internet? This is 2008. A few months later, my husband found a new job. We got to move back to the Nashville area, and I went full steam ahead, figuring out, okay, what do I do to start a business? How does internet business work? How do all of these things put together? Because I knew it was my responsibility to help the family out financially. That was the new season I was going in. It wasn't a season that I prepared for. It wasn't a season that I wanted. But God pushed us into this new season, even though we didn't want to be in it. So we learned all these great lessons like, hey, we need adult supervision with our decisions. Help us, Lord.
Yep.
And what happened through the years, he continued to work that job for about 4 years. And then we realized, with my career really exploding and he had a big job, one of us was going to have to step down to focus on the kids full time because my attention being divided between my company and the kids, with the kids getting older, especially with five boys, something was going to fall through the cracks.
Right.
And at that point, we decided that what would be best for the kids and best for us is for him to retire and for me to be the breadwinner of the family. None of that we could have foreseen happening, you know, just a few years before. But God, in that terrible, painful season, he developed us into who we are now, the inner strength to go through hard things now through that experience. I remember lying in bed with my husband trying to go to sleep one night, and we had, you know, we didn't have any money. And I said, just let me sell our wedding ring. It's worth a lot.
Yeah.
And he said, you can't sell it. It will kill me. Just keep that wedding ring. But it's the decisions we made. It's how we let God really reshape the way we viewed the world, the way we were viewing our marriage, the way we had our priorities. That was the best thing that could have happened to us. Yeah. And I wouldn't have said that then.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. In the moment, it's a lot.
Yeah.
How did you guys personally, when you're in the middle of that and you're making that big decision of, okay, I'm going to be the breadwinner, what did that look like for you in as being the woman? Did you feel out of place? Was it hard finding that balance? I love how you talked about that balance in the beginning, you know, with Adam and Eve being this perfect balance for each other. Because as women, we are supposed to be the stay-at-home mom. We're supposed to, you know, cook all the meals. I'm like, I wish my husband would cook all the meals because he's a way better cook than me, you know. But what did that look like for you? Was that a struggle to find that place of security in this is what God has for us right now?
Well, here's what's interesting. I grew up the granddaughter of a Southern Baptist preacher, but he retired, so I didn't grow up in the church. I grew up with a mother, after my father passed away, a mother who loved the Lord, taught me all about the Lord, even went to a Christian school. But I didn't grow up in the church.
Okay.
And I think to some degree, now I love the church. I teach at church. I'm dedicated to the church. The church is the hope of the world. But I think to some degree, I escaped a lot of the baggage that's put on women by some church culture.
Right.
And that is, you know, this is what women do, fit into this little box over here. This is what the family is supposed to look like. I missed all that. Yeah. So for us, when we decided, oh, well, because I travel all the time and I do this, and we really feel like this is what God's doing with my work, it seemed like an easy thing for us to do. And people at church, at our church, and other people in the community kept going, wow, is it crazy? How hard is it? What kind of things are you hearing from other people? And we both went, nothing. We didn't realize until we got around our church friends and started discussing it in small group how completely strange it was. And even our pastor, our old pastor of our church, who I adore, he passed away a few years ago. And before he passed away, he knew he had a terrible kind of cancer. He knew he was going downhill, and he did, you know, these 10, I think it was 10 part sermon series about all the big issues in life. And he's old school. So I don't blame him for this, but I'll never forget. This makes me so sad when I think of it. My husband and I are in the audience, and he's talking about, and if you're a man and you don't work, you should be ashamed of yourself, letting your wife support you. And I knew he was talking about men who refused to work and that they were actually called to work. I knew he meant it that way. But I remember my husband feeling so deflated after that, even though we knew it wasn't our situation. But it's still just that strange cultural thing that it's so different. And for me, because I spent those years from 2008 on building a business and didn't start the ministry portion of my work until 2014.
Okay.
I still missed a lot of the details and the nuance of Christian culture and what's acceptable and what's not. I still didn't fully realize how unusual we were up until I went into the ministry in 2014. Yeah. So I think things are changing, and I think it's healthy to change. I think when we move away from the old concept of woman as helper, meaning I'm just going to help people by delivering socks to them.
Right.
Now, mind you, I still do the laundry and I deliver the socks to my husband. I'm not saying that that's bad. I'm saying, but if we are called to do something other than that, it's not going against God's will. God was very clear with Mark and I where he wanted us going. And it was almost as if we didn't have much of a say in it. But once we get away from an old cultural concept that isn't even biblical, and we can go, okay, what does God actually say about things in the Bible, and where is God leading our family? That's the way to kind of break off that cultural heaviness and that weight that we all bear. And sometimes we don't even realize that it's cultural instead of scriptural.
Oh, absolutely. I grew up in a home that I joked about, I wish my husband would do all the cooking, but that was the home I grew up in. My dad is a phenomenal cook. He had a home-cooked meal on the table like twice a day. He would get up early and make breakfast before school. And he was a teacher. My parents were both teachers. And so I grew up with a working mom. I never saw that like stay-at-home mom thing. And even a lot of my friends had working moms as well. And so it was interesting to me that the more time I spent in the church, my mind just continued to shift in that way. Like this, I feel like this is what I'm supposed to do as a wife. When I got married, I'm supposed to stay home. And I worked a very, very busy full-time job when we had our first child. And I ended up making the decision to stay home just because I couldn't work 60 to 70 hours a week. It wasn't fair to her or me. And so I made that decision to stay home, and that was hard. It was hard for me to step back from something I had poured into for so long.
Oh, sure.
And now looking back, I'm like, well, of course, like God was working in that. I'm glad that he shifted my life in a different direction. But I'm really passionate about women being in church leadership. Mm-hmm. What has that journey looked like for you as you've stepped into ministry more? You teach in churches. Mm-hmm. What obstacles have you had to overcome in being a woman and really finding your place at the table that's mostly men?
Well, it's such an interesting story. So we're Southern Baptist. My grandfather was Southern Baptist. We're Southern Baptist. My kids go to Southern Baptist school. But I went to Southern Baptist High School. There are some things about the Southern Baptist Church that I never picked up on, just oblivious. And when I went into the ministry in 2014, I did it to build a ministry for Christine Kane. I did it to build Propel Women for her. Mm-hmm. And I had my first book come out in 2016, and I went from speaking about business topics to life topics and spiritual topics and just telling my story of what God had done in my life. And as I spoke more and more, I was invited to speak in different places. I started speaking in churches. And I would just tell my kids would say, you know, hey, what are you doing this weekend? I go, oh, I'm preaching at this church, because that's what I was doing. And the kids came home from school one day and said, Mr. So-and-so said, women are not allowed to teach. They are not allowed to preach. And we don't know what to say. And I was like, oh. And I had to literally look it up. Like, is this a Southern Baptist thing? Because I didn't understand.
Yeah.
And so I had this conversation. This is with my oldest son, who's now 21. And I said, oh, this is a denominational thing. And I explained denominations. And I said, forever, we're going to find different things that different denominations believe. And that's okay. But it isn't necessarily the letter of the law, because there's different parts in Scripture. You know, some pieces of Scripture, if you take it out of context, it will look like you shouldn't. Others, it should. There were women in the New Testament who were leaders in the church, went through all that. And so for years, he would come home and go, hey, I was taught such and such. Is this real or is this brainwashing? And we would go over it. For me, and again, my old pastor who I loved, there was no way a woman was going to be on stage.
Yeah.
And through the years, I just told God, whatever the local church, if they ask me to serve them, I will serve. Mm-hmm. As long as it's not in the toddler room, because
I'm the same way.
I already had my toddlers. It's not good for me.
I had those little kids. It's not happening.
They can't talk. Their nose is always running, and I'm just going to throw goldfish at them until their moms can get there. Like, just I'll direct parking. Don't give me toddlers. So anyway, you just go through life. I'm teaching. You know, churches call me in, or conferences call me in to teach. Honored to get to do that. And I taught at a women's event in Louisville, Kentucky a few years ago. And then after the event, a few weeks went by, I got a call from the pastor asking me if I would consider coming back and teaching on the, here's what happened. Signed up to teach at the women's event, got a call from the pastor, and they said, we also want you to teach on the weekend. So you'll teach, you know, that Saturday morning, you'll teach Saturday night services, Sunday, and three Sunday morning services. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say no. I wanted to say no badly because I it's so important, and I was terrified. And I said, okay. And I panicked about it and didn't want to do it. And as the weeks got closer to doing it, I thought about every excuse I could give them, like, my kids need me home Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Sorry. My dog is sick. My church doesn't even believe that women can teach. Like, the whole thing. But I made that promise to God that I would serve the local church. And a few weeks after, I survived. I didn't die. A few weeks after my first run of four Sunday services, they called and they said, would you consider becoming a teaching pastor? So come and teach three times a year for church. And again, the weight of that felt like too much, but I remembered that promise, I will serve the local church. And I said, sure. And, you know, did it with knees knocking every time, because I felt the weight and the importance of it. Also felt the weight and importance of it in a culture that sometimes doesn't think women should be able to do that.
Right.
So it's my job for some reason in life, to some degree, to pioneer for other women, whether it's pioneering for other women on how to start a business successfully to bring in money for their households, or pioneering for women to say yes at that opportunity and make it normal in that church to see a woman for all Sunday, for Saturday night and all three Sunday services. It's an honor for God to give me those opportunities, and it's my job to not let my own self-doubt keep me out of the opportunities that God's put in front of me.
Have you seen a shift in your heart as you've done that more and more? I mean, I'm sure your knees are still knocking every time you do it. Mine would be for sure. But what has God done in your heart as you've began to step into those spaces more?
Instead of fear, I began to feel, it happened the first time I was in the pastor's office just getting ready for my time to go out. I've never talked about this before. And I was praying. Gosh, I'll get emotional just thinking about it. And I had this feeling that this is exactly what God made me to do. Hmm. Even though I'm not somebody that ever wanted to be a speaker, I'm not someone that ever had a dream to go into the ministry. My dream growing up was to be a stay-home mom. And I think sometimes we think that what we're meant to do in life is monolithic, and that if we have a dream to be a stay-home mom, we're going to be a stay-home mom forever. But in life, we have one purpose. Our only purpose in life when we're born is to get older, get a little sense, and decide if we accept Jesus as our Savior or not, period. That's our only, everyone talks about purpose, that's our big purpose. And if we decide that we accept Him, we tell other people about Him and what He's done for us, that's it. But calling is completely different. Our calling changes in each season of our life. My calling in college was to try not to flunk out. I wasn't a good student. My calling in my 20s was to be a stay-home mom. My calling in my 30s was really to be a stay-home mom and then start balancing stay-home mom with learning how to start a business. My calling in my 40s is to build what I'm building and to preach and to teach and to help women live into everything that God has for them. I don't know what my calling is going to be in my 50s, but our callings change in different seasons. My calling right now is different than it was 6 months ago because of COVID. Life continually changes, and God is a God of renewal and restarts continually. So sometimes we get this thought of, well, I've been this way for the past 3 years, or I've been in this season, and this is what's going to continue forever. But God is always calling us to new things. And so for me, as a shy girl, a girl who never even before a few years ago wanted any of this, to be in the pastor's office and to have this feeling of you're doing what I meant for you to do, that's been really special. And because of that, I work really hard to make sure I don't get in my own way.
Right.
Because God always has something for us to do. He has some way for us to partner with Him in this world to bring His purposes to life, whether it's adopting a child or starting a garden or preaching his word or writing a book, whatever it is, God has new things for us all the time. And our job is to not hold ourselves back, because what we often do as women, I think because how we're culturally conditioned, is we continually tell God no. We tell God no, that we're not meant for this. No, this dream is selfish. No, I don't know where this idea came in my heart. And sometimes we don't verbally tell God no. We don't even sometimes know we do it, but we tell God no because we don't take action. And we have this idea that as women, we're just going to wait on the Lord. But if you look at the Hebrew translation of that verse about waiting on the Lord, that wait is an active wait. It's a partnering with Him. It's working hard. I mean, I've gone across 100 finish lines, but you better believe I'm the one that laces up my shoes. God doesn't do that for me, but He's the one that gets me across the finish line. And I think as women, when we have this feeling of I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, this doesn't make sense, I'm out of my comfort zone, and that the lie of, you know, who do I think I am, and the lie that we think anytime we have a dream or a goal or God is leading us to somewhere new in life, if we automatically think that's our own selfishness or that's the enemy trying to get us off track, we lose the chance to hear what God is calling us to do next in life. And sometimes we think, well, if God's calling me to do something, it's going to be something big or this or that. The most important things that God calls us to do as women are things that no one else is ever going to see. It is, for some women, it looks like breaking generational habits that are toxic in our family. Right. That's the toughest thing you can ever do. I mean, every woman's job in each season that God gives her is going to be completely different, and it won't look like any other woman's. That's what's so amazing about God.
I'm reading a book right now. It's interesting. You're talking about callings. I'm reading a book right now. It's titled Callings, 20 Centuries of Christian Women or Christian Wisdom on Vocation. And it's just this, basically it's a history book of different theologians and history of God's calling on people's lives. And it's just fascinating to see the way that, you know, God shifts us and moves us and directs our callings, whether it is those small things that we don't even realize are a calling in our life, to pour into, you know, as a teacher, to pour into that child at school that has been overlooked and overseen and is hurting, to be that one person to change that child's life. And you know, whatever that may be, that we all have a calling on our life and the importance of recognizing that and really walking in that confidently. As we kind of wind down, would you just leave everybody with a little bit of encouragement? We have been in a crazy season of life, of the world. Would you speak to the woman that's like, okay, I am not strong. The adversity I've faced this year, or maybe over the last few years, whatever she's facing, can you speak to her and just encourage her to find security and hope in those seasons of life?
Whatever you are going through, I think for most of us, we've been going through some things that are really tough. We have had what's felt like everything in life shaken. For some of us, it looks different. Some of us are having trouble financially. Some people are doing okay financially, but emotionally it's difficult. Some people, if you have children, things are difficult with your children. Unfortunately, this is life. But yes. Unfortunately, too, we find ourselves in a season where everything is intensified. And if things can go wrong in 2020, it seems like they have. Yeah. But I want you to know that you're not forgotten, that God sees you, that He is with you, that He is not going to abandon you, that He has great plans for your life. And even though right now you may be in the valley looking up at the mountaintop going, I'm never going to get there, He is going to bring you there, because our whole lives are a series of valley and mountaintop and valley and mountaintop. And if you feel alone, if you feel like when you pray it's not going anywhere, remember that that's not necessarily truth, that's feeling. And remember who God is. Remember what He says about Himself, that He loves you. He has not forgotten you. He will pull you out of whatever you are in. And what I want you to do, if you feel stuck, if you feel like the weight of adversity has really got you down and got you out, is I want you to start taking action. I want you to take one scary, intentional step at a time, whatever that looks for in your life. You can start by saying one prayer. Start by doing one lap around the track. Start by just reading one chapter in your Bible when you haven't felt like it. Start by saying you're sorry to one person and let conversations come out. In your business, start by just making one single sale. Start by writing one paragraph in the novel that you want to write one day. Start by sending one text, reaching out to a friend to open up those lines of conversation. We don't have to know what all of our actions are going to do one day, but it's important that we start even when we don't feel like it, because what the enemy wants to do is, in these trying times, he wants to depress us and discourage us. He wants to hurt us, and he wants to take us out with self-doubt and adversity. The enemy is going to lie to us and tell us we're alone. He's going to tell us that God has abandoned us. He's going to tell us that, yes, all these times God has come through, but maybe this time he's not going to. He is a liar. He is the father of lies. God is good. He is with you. He wants to partner with you to bring his purposes to life. This could be in your city, in your community, in your home. When you don't feel like doing anything, just start with one small step. Don't let inertia win. Don't let the enemy win. Keep taking steps toward the future that God has for you, because he loves you.
Well, I am encouraged, and I know everybody else is. As we wrap up, would you share a resource with us? I ask all my guests to share something that they've been reading, watching, listening to that's really helped them reframe their thinking to look at the world in a new way.
Yeah, this isn't spiritual at all.
That's great.
But I'm obsessed with it. It is James Clear's Atomic Habits.
Oh, yes. I have that on my list. I need to read it.
Well, I didn't want to read it for a long time because of all the hype around it. Atomic Habits. Right. So I'm like, what? Here, I'm so jaded. Whenever people say something's great, too. I'm like, whatever. I'm sure it's not that good.
I'm the same way. I'm like, I'm not a bandwagon person. So if everybody's talking about it, I am like, nope, that's going to be terrible.
Exactly. But it really lives up to the hype. And as you're reading it, there's this... You go, oh, well, this makes perfect sense, of course, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And there's this phenomenon where something makes so much sense that something you hadn't thought of before, you're like, oh, I've known that, but we haven't.
Yeah.
But it's just that good. And Atomic Habits for me has changed the way I look at life, because in life, just I won't go on and on about it, but in life, our future and our trajectory is determined by the little tiny decisions we make all day long today. So it just helps me remember to kind of what I talked about before, just take one step, do one push-up, say no to the second piece of cake, call your grandma when you'd rather not call your grandma and have her fuss at you for not calling in so long. It's those little tiny decisions that we make during the day that form our lives and put us on a trajectory of success or struggle in the future.
Okay, I'm going to read it. I'm just going to get over myself and I'm going to read it.
Same. You'll be just like me, I promise.
Okay. Tell me something fun that has brought you joy this week.
Something fun that has brought me joy this week. So I love amusement parks.
Okay.
I'm very sad that I can't go to amusement parks.
Right.
And I have been watching with my 13-year-old son at night when the other kids go to bed. We put YouTube on the big TV. And we watched this YouTube channel called Defunct Land, and it's about old amusement park rides that were in the heyday or taken out, or it's the history of amusement parks.
Oh, that's awesome.
We literally know everything about amusement parks, from the first one ever to the rides at Six Flags that didn't work. We're obsessed, and we watch YouTubes of people on roller coasters because we can't go on them right now. So that's super, super fun. Yeah.
That's so fun. I just showed my two older kids, I just showed them the video of where people pass out on roller coasters.
Yes.
Or like the ones where they like, we were talking about like breaking the sound barrier and how, like what it does to your body and those kind of things. And then of course I was like, you know, like on a roller coaster and like a ride, those ones that like slingshot you back and you go flying, how people pass out. And I mean, I love watching people fall down. I love watching people pass out. So we're watching this video, all those videos on YouTube, and I'm just crying because it's so funny to watch people like pass out and then come to.
And I think it's like also if you have a medical condition that happens, and part of me is like, should I be laughing? But they put the video up. So
yeah, it's just so good.
You know what? If I passed out on a ride, I would put the video up.
Oh,
if people didn't
sure.
cry laughing, I'd be disappointed.
For sure. Yeah. I love it. So all right. Well, thank you, friend. I appreciate this conversation. I have had a blast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, for all of you listening, I know the first question that you're wanting to ask right now is, where in the world can I go get Allie's book? Because that conversation was amazing. She's so incredibly wise and you just have to read it. So there's a link in the show notes today that you can just click on and go get a copy of her book. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. I've loved this conversation. We'll be right back here next week with part two of this series, answering the question, what are the secrets of a secure woman? And I've invited a really special guest to talk about body image and what that looks like and how we can be secure as women in our bodies and who we are and how God created us. So be sure and join us back here next Thursday for another new episode. You can always, of course, follow me on Instagram and Facebook every day for new content. And finally, keep asking questions for a friend.